Welcome everybody to today's webinar, Taking Your Website to Mobile, a Practical Guide for Marketers and Business Execs. My name is John Field, Product Marketing Manager for Cycle Corporation, and I'll be the moderator today. We're recording the webinar and we'll send a link to the attendees to the recorded presentation within a couple of days. And we'll also provide the PDF of these PowerPoint slides, so feel free to share those with colleagues who could not make this webinar live. If you have any questions or any comments during the webinar, please do post them in the dialogue window on your webinar toolbar on the chat box there. Or you can do this via Twitter by using the hashtag CycleMobile, all one word. Presenting on the topic today is Greg Zapaf, the account strategist for Digitaria, and John Van Spyke, general manager of Digitaria Sports. Greg works with numerous Digitaria clients, including Qualcomm, Best Western, Experian, WK Kellogg Foundation, Tempra Energy. His areas of expertise include concept development, user experience, and information architecture-related projects. Greg has previously worked in e-commerce and e-support management and development roles for Xerox Corporation, CBS Interactive, and Gateway. Over the last 7 years, Greg has spent time in agency environments where he transitioned more from project management to pure information architecture and user experience roles for a variety of clients, including Apple and Microsoft. John has spent the last 15 years working in all aspects of digital and interactive marketing, focused on building alliances, defining marketing programs, and driving revenue across multiple verticals. John has been the primary component for Digitaria's winning sports division. John has established and managed strategic relationships with key Digitaria clients, including YouTube, NFL, Quicksilver, ATP, and ESPN. John's experience and results have led to the development of fan-centric models that focus on utilizing technology, marketing, and analytics to solve business problems and generate revenue for clients. So welcome, Greg and John. I'll let John introduce Digitaria.
Great. Thank you, John. Good afternoon, everybody. Digitaria is an interactive agency. We are an agency of over 300 purely digital specialists across the country. We are a wholly owned subsidiary of JWT out of New York, and we are part of the WPP network. We were founded in 1997, and we really focused on delivering highly engaging and highly rich digital experiences. We position digital at the core of our business, and we provide our clients with creative and strategic guidance to reach consumers in an increasingly technology-centered world. Digitaria has delivered innovative and award-winning campaigns for a diverse spectrum of clients and verticals. We work across, as John mentioned, we work across sports, entertainment, media, consumer goods, technology, and nonprofit, among a few other verticals. We work with clients to help understand their business and deliver solutions that help them stay ahead of the competition. I want to introduce Greg Zapar, and Greg Zapar is going to take you through kind of one of the components of where we focus our efforts more and more these days than ever before, and it's really around mobile and the mobile strategy and the things that you need to consider and think about as you embark on your mobile digital roadmap. Greg?
Thanks for the introduction, everyone, and thank you for taking the time out today. I really appreciate it. And what I'd really like to cover today is really to look at the mobile opportunity as a whole and understand what users are doing and why this key 2010 growth that we've seen in mobile has really come about. So again, we'll look at the mobile opportunity in terms of why mobile and why that growth. We'll look at features of interest in terms of what are users doing out there, what are key drivers in terms of content consumption, and what's driving that growth again. One thing that you'll hear a lot about today is the mobile ecosystem in terms of what does the environment look like, and there's some key points that you're going to want to take in terms of developing your own mobile ecosystem and approaching mobile, not just from a project perspective, but really how does mobile integrate with your overall brand, your overall company, your values, and your business goals and objectives. We'll also take a look at really a ground level approach in terms of client mobile strategy. Where do you begin? This is a really key, there's a couple of key messages that you'll see reiterated today in terms of user experience and mapping user goals and objectives to both business need, but really most importantly, user need. And this is really a section that we're going to want to spend a lot of time on towards the end of the call today before our case study. This is ground level information. We're going to interject a number of tips and points within this that we've learned firsthand and we want to share with you. And then John will come back on the line and kind of walk us through a case study and show you how you can make all this fit together. While it's not a simple solution, it's a web of individual pieces that fit together within your entire ecosystem. And John's going to bring that all home and show you how that came together. So the first thing that we want to talk about, and we're going to want to move very quickly with a lot of information to cover today, but we definitely want to take calls and questions towards the end of the discussion to address your specific needs. But let's look at the mobile opportunity. Why was 2010 such a growth point for mobile? And really, you can go back and look at the inflection point of the fourth quarter of 2010. What happened then was that we finally saw smartphone manufacturing outpace PC shipments. In other words, more people are buying smartphones than are buying PCs, and that's a worldwide statistic. Growth and your growth is going to be tied to mobile. Why mobile? There's a number of reasons. The first is accessibility. You now have the opportunity to target specific users, your best customers, whether it's by geo-targeting, by device, by specific interest, from social channels. You know, mobile's really become the social of 2010. You have accessibility to content anytime, anywhere, shareable content, viral content that can be cascaded out throughout your ecosystem anytime, anywhere. Relevance. We think about our cell phones in the way that we think about a purse or a wallet. It's hyper-relevant to you. Every app, every bookmarked website, that's meaningful to you. And we've always looked at personalization as a reflection, you know, obviously of ourselves, but you now have a device, a technology device that's hyper-relevant to you and uniquely you. Another interesting point is, of course, that measurement is a component from mobile analytics. We can glean data that you cannot necessarily pull from other broadcast mediums such as television. We have very tangible insights that can be pulled from this data. Deliverability is another key. You know, typically phone numbers change less than email address. So you really have a good solid touch point to reach users. And there's a notion which has been referred to across the internet as SOLOMO. Again, kind of summarizing this is social, local, and mobile. That's how users and mobile users think, interact, and interact. Things and information is hyper-relevant. What drove consumption and what drove the interest in smartphones? Well, there's a couple of interesting things that have come about. One is you now have a lot of cool stuff. There's features, there's media, be it video, audio, content. There's apps, there's mobile websites. You can get your message across, and you're now able to better get your message across really because of larger screens and larger form factors tied to mobile devices. Particularly, not only the improved resolution on screens, but the touch, which Apple brought to us. It's really improved the user experience for content consumption, along with lower chipsets, you know, lower cost operating systems, and more affordability and accessibility as a whole for mobile users around the world. One thing that we've seen, just an interesting data point, is that we've seen the U.S. Slightly increase their growth patterns in terms of data consumption, and one of the key drivers behind this, which may or may not exist worldwide, is the use of unlimited data plans. We see that in about 33% of the U.S. market, as opposed to 8% in the EU. That's, you know, a key driver, and that's what's going to continue the growth, and that's really what's tied to some increases in the U.S. And, you know, that said, we've seen significant increases across the European Union in terms of this content consumption and smartphone growth, really Spain leading the charge there at 38%. In terms of features of interest and opportunities, content is king. Content's very tough to get at times, but you really need to think about content and the type of information that you have and that you can disseminate across your ecosystem. There's a lot of drivers behind this, but really social networking, classified information, and retail are the biggest pulls. Publications, we see them extending growth. There's a lot of save the newspaper type of mentality and daily interest, and really the iPad and tablet growth has helped facilitate that. I'll just interject here. I understand that there's some discrepancies between whether you know, the tablet is actually a mobile device, and it depends on whether you actually have a data plan associated with it or whether you just access wirelessly. But for the sake of a discussion, we'll consider the tablet a mobile device for this discussion today. Just follow up in terms of retail. We see sophisticated markets like Japan, who have been, you know, very mature markets in terms of the mobile space, have quickly adopted m-commerce and other, you know, on top of the other mobile and smartphone applications. SMS is still the lead, and really this is an interesting medium to look at. When you look at the statistics that you have as a marketer or as a business objective, you have the ability to reach 99%, 72% of your users, but 99% of every text message is read, and 90% of those are read in the first 3 minutes. When you take a look at and compare that to traditional internet traffic at, you know, an almost untraceable 0.73% for conversion, as opposed to 8.22%, text really has a message, and SMS really has a message that you can take away in terms of being able to reach your customers from a marketing perspective. A couple other data points. You see that teens, depending on your background, actually interface the most with this medium, and we see that the big discrepancy between age ranges, but we still see text as the leader in this field, and it's currently the number one way to receive coupons. There is a lot of discussion around texting and couponing and whether that interfaces negatively or positively for corporations in terms of, you know, are we able to sell our value or are we really just selling discounts? And there's a lot of discussion that you'll want to think about in terms of your mobile strategy of whether discounting or rewards or some other mechanism through text is an appropriate strategy for you. Location-based marketing. We've been fortunate enough to work with clients on a number of geofencing, which really means within a certain geographic boundary determined by GPS, we can convey information. We can work with social channels so that I can interface and work with specific people in geofenced areas that are relevant to my network, because as your social networks grow, the amount of information that you can cascade out to that network becomes smaller. So in other words, the same thing that you say to your mother or your father or your grandmother on Facebook, you may not say to your friends. And so as your network grows, you know, you actually have a different type of communication mechanism. But location-based marketing is very key. We see Facebook putting Facebook places out there, enabling the ability to check in and receive coupons or discounts or friend deals or donations to charity. So we really see an advent of a location-based marketing really brought about by GPS functionality within cell phones. So let's talk about the mobile ecosystem for a minute. And ecosystem is a key word that I want to think about today in terms of your digital ecosystem as well. And there's a couple of information bits that you want to kind of take from this. When you look at the success and Android and Apple had stellar 2010s, when Apple reported earnings in January, they blew virtually every estimate out of the water. But when you look back, whether it was the original iPod or whether it was the original iPhone, it wasn't just the phone. It wasn't just text and specs. It's how everything fits together. It's the store itself. It's the features of the phone. It may be the white earphones identifying you as part of the Apple tribe, but it's not one individual piece. It's the sum of the whole, and you need to think about mobile in that type of metaphor. You really want to think about how this fits into the larger ecosystem of your company and your brand and your environment, and how does it interface with other pieces of that digital, your other digital touch points. In terms of the mobile ecosystem itself, it's not becoming simpler, unfortunately. It's becoming much more complex. We have a lot of leaders in the field. We have previous leaders when we look at BlackBerry or Symbian and Nokia that have seen market share fall when Android and Apple have actually grown an install base. You have a lot of different browsers. You have multiple operating systems and versions, and in the case of Android, those are really tied to carriers, so you don't have as much control over those. They're open systems, but a little bit less control as a developer and as a strategist trying to get your mobile strategy in place. So just a couple things to think about, but we really see the advent of Apple and Android. BlackBerry is still a valid consideration within the marketplace, but really you want to take a look at your analytics and find out who your users are and what's going on in your marketplace. And analytics is the key to that, and you'll hear that message driven home a number of times today. Just a couple highlights here from Apple. Again, virtually all estimates from both the iPhone and the iPad have far surpassed. We're looking at potentially, depending on the estimates, 43 million iPad sales this year. iPhone sales, 100 million worldwide by the end of 2011. And again, those numbers have typically been shattered by Apple. And we also see the advent of these specifically tablets within the corporate marketplace. So we see a number of larger corporations buying larger chunks and larger unit sales of tablet devices, and not just Apple, across the board with the new Huawei Playbook or Motorola Zoom that's coming out as well. Android has continued its growth. A year and a half ago when we began some of our initial work within mobile, Android wasn't as much of a player, but we've seen month-over-month, year-over-year growth within the platform. One in three smartphones in the U.S. today sold are Android. So when you're looking at strategy, I'll kind of put the top two up there, as you definitely need to consider Android and consider Apple. But again, look at the analytics to see how that supports your marketplace. The Amazon App Store is imminent. That's expected to be in a new Android app marketplace. And one key differentiator for Android is the ability to support Flash. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later, of how you can realize some development efficiencies, because previously you wouldn't need to target specific handsets when you look to developing a platform for Android. But the key takeaway here is currently, if you have a device, an Android device running running Froyo, which is the current operating system, you are able to support Flash, which may be a component of your existing website. So what's in store for 2011 beyond what we've discussed? I think m-commerce is a big piece of that. We're already seeing mature markets, again, like Japan, frequently engaging in mobile payment. Users across the board are looking at real-time pricing and researching, and that really kind of marries well with the offline and offline experience. We see a lot of companies that we work with trying to figure out how, again, from a digital ecosystem, how does mobile fit in? How do we transition offline behavior within the retail presence associated with online activities, whether it's mobile or from the traditional website? We continue to see use of QR codes. Popular overseas, still catching up a little bit in the U.S. from a U.S. perspective, but we see a lot more growth within this area. Mobile marketing in and of itself, the campaign element, really a part of, it should be a part of your mobile strategy, but it's often overlooked. In other words, you build it, but you're not necessarily sure how to get people there or interested in your mobile product or website. So there'll be a lot in that area as well as that marketing piece continues to evolve. We've been fortunate to work on a number of second screen implementations. So in other words, if you envision users sitting on their sofa watching traditional television broadcast, can they do something else? And they're frequently doing something else, be it from existing website mechanisms, or we've had the ability to work on various integration pieces, whether it's tablet or mobile, to get premium content or unlock premium content. There's applications that we've built where they actually listen to the show and unlock special behind-the-scenes videos or additional videos and additional clips of the show, or even couponing. The tablet market will continue to grow. We've already walked through numbers there. Micropayments. The concept of, you're giving something for free, but if you're really engaged with the service or brand, you may continue to buy additional pieces. So whether it's power-ups, additional characters, new weapons for games, you see a lot of the smaller models, smaller incremental payments and in-app and in-website purchasing to supplement the initial outlay. Lower cost, I put this in here. I'm not sure that this will be the case. This is carrier controlled, but we do see in some cases fixed plans evolving to unlimited plans in terms of data consumption. The cloud, storage within the cloud, we see Amazon really basing a lot of their app store around the cloud concept so that you can access applications or access content that you've purchased within the cloud and not tied to a specific device. Gamification. This is really kind of funware. I caution a little bit on it because you could become sort of a one-hit wonder where you just don't really come back to the website or the application. It was sort of a novelty and to get a brand message across. But we do see continued use of that to make things fun, getting people to fill out surveys or a form, but in a more fun, engaging way. And then near-field communication, which is really sensor-based and offers sort of a localized ability to make payments or to provide offers by way of the mobile device. So I'll segue again into really kind of the meat of this discussion, which is how do we begin the mobile discussion, whether it's in-house or with technology partners or agency partners? And I kind of put tongue-in-cheek in here. Here's some of the information that we typically get from a vendor perspective is a client calls and says, we need to build an app, or I want something for Android, which is often confused with the Android platform, or with the Droid itself, which is a specific handset model, or just make me a mobile site. Which sometimes just means don't use Flash in it. But it's interesting because you really need to take a step back and look at your very initial outlay into this and forging into this initiative. Mobile is an initiative. It's not a project. A lot of clients approach this as a project with a fixed beginning and a fixed end. It's really not a standalone effort. You've got to look at how mobile fits into your overall ecosystem and understand that it's an ongoing effort. Most of us wouldn't put a website up without thinking about how it integrates with the rest of our ecosystem and how is it going to be supported long term. We don't just put it up and leave it there. How does content evolve over time? How do we roadmap or phase in additional features or functionality or new content? Or how do we go back and look at existing content and see if it's still meeting the need? So understand that mobile is really a longer term initiative and not just a 1 month or a 3 month or a 6 month project. Again, summarizing on the digital ecosystem, you have a lot out there. You have websites. You have existing campaigns and traditional print, online, and offline campaigns. How does mobile fit in? How does the call center fit in? What if your call center is primarily chat-based? Is that appropriate for the mobile space? If it's call-based, how does that fit in? Kiosks, displays, you have a lot of social mechanisms out there. What can you bring to mobile and how does it fit in with the larger picture, not just a project level initiative? Again, one thing that I like to caution, whether you're in-house or whether you're from a vendor perspective, is a lot of times these items that we called out above are really isolated within department and in organizations. And they're not always supported the same way, and there's different agendas based around there. So you really need to aggregate and get a quorum and a critical mass as to how these things work together and understand the long-term roadmap for mobile strategy and development. You don't want to be the one that created an unsustainable project without a lot of thought and planning behind it. Maybe you thought you could get a bonus. Maybe someone mandated that you needed to do this over the next 3 months. You really need to understand that while that may be a valid use case and a valid scenario within your organization, you really need to understand the longer-term planning associated with it. And really think about the user, and we're going to talk a lot about the user today, mapping their journey, what they expect out of this, what are their needs, goals, and desires of actual users, not just what the boardroom dictates is what we should do with mobile, but look to your users. A couple tips is, you really want to bring a vision, a value, and an experience that matches that to your mobile strategy. And I encourage, if you're not familiar with user experience, to research it a bit on the web, and I've provided a link here, but really think about what you're fulfilling from a user standpoint. The next thing you're going to want to think a little bit about is information itself and the content strategy behind this. So this is a classic chart around information architecture, and really information architecture boils down to three categories. It's the users, it's the context of use, and it's really the content itself. And what you're seeking here is the intersection point of all three of these. So when we look at users, we want to think, who are they? What are their behaviors? What do they believe? Is it accurate? What are their real needs, goals and desires. And this is where analytics or existing customer data, be it from your call center, be it from surveys, be it from focus groups, can really bring information to the forefront and insight to the forefront. It also relieves a lot of the religious arguments that we have and discussions that we have as an internal organization of, well, I think we should do it this way. I think we should do it another way. If you look at it together and you look at the data, you can often work through those challenges much more easily because you have data and you have insight. The context of use is very different for mobile users. You're really looking at when they use it, where they use it, how they use it, how much time can they allocate to using this platform. Is a 10-minute registration process appropriate for a mobile user who's catching this on the way between the subway on their way to work? And then you want to look at the content itself. Is this the right content? What's the voice and tone? Has it been layered effectively so that I can catch overall users and then filter down to more advanced users requiring additional levels of detail? And does this really address their need going back to the user themselves? And a lot of times there's sort of a house cleaning process that's gone through, and I see two sides of this very frequently. One is everything can go. It wasn't important in the first place. The other is everything needs to stay. So you're really going to need to seek balance across all of these three. You can't control them all, but you can look for an optimized balance and an internal with your internal team or with agency partners, look at ways to look for this optimized balance. The initial discussion, I put some initial questions here that we typically walk users through or walk clients through and participate with them on, but has a mobile strategy actually been defined or discussed? And what's a long-term roadmap? Long-term may be a year, it may be 2 years. It may not be much longer than that, but it's longer than just the project itself from a supportability and a content perspective. Who's the core audience? It's not just the CEO, and that's often a difficult discussion to have, but what do analytics, again, bring to the forefront? You really want to invest with the user experience, not what you believe is your corporate experience. Think about what's handled in-house. Where can you realize efficiencies? Do you have a development team, or does that need to be outsourced or partnered with? Do you handle design in-house? Do you handle overall strategy in-house? You can break these pieces up. And different organizations specialize. We work across all. We can do just the design. We can do just the strategy. But you really want to find a partner that meets with your goals and your needs and your budgets. If there's timelines driving the solution, you really need to look at risk mitigation if the timeline's extremely tight. And again, with budget, depending on who has the budget or who allocated budget for the project within your organization, who's calling the shots on final strategic decisions. Again, one last note, because we see social incorporated a lot, whether it's Facebook or other mechanisms. If you're engaging in social, by definition, that dictates a dialogue with users, not a monologue. How do you support this long-term, and how do you plan to support it? Does that require an additional resource need? So it's just something to think about, and these are some initial questions that we kind of walk through. You probably have others. A tip here, and I'll run through it really quick, but you really want to focus on the users, and one exercise that we go through is mapping the user experience. So we may take a specific target user and walk them through everything from the initial need and consideration phases all the way through to completion and reflection, and would they purchase again, repeat business, and look at the strengths and opportunities, and really down below is sort of we call it the mental models that users go through and think during each stage of the conversion process and the conversion funnel. So the next question that typically comes up is, do you really need an app? And I kind of put this, again, a bit tongue-in-cheek, but there's an app for that? Really? Well, did there need to be an app for that? The one thing that you have to think about first and foremost when developing an application itself is you have to offer utility and value as defined by the user. The repeat rate and retention rates, if you will, within applications, very low. At 30 days, virtually 0% still use the application. So again, you don't want to build a one-hit wonder or a one-touch wonder. You want repeat interaction with the application or the experience that you're creating within the application itself. Couple tips that might steer you towards an app versus a mobile website is if there's complex interactions or if you have existing deeper, maybe premium users that are paying for an existing service on your traditional website. If you're looking to take advantage of hardware features, whether it's GPS or texting or the camera itself, you want to take a look at this, some type of hardware that you can leverage within the handsets themselves. And again, from premium services, it's really interesting to take a look at how you can port your premium services to a mobile environment. We see that in the cases of Netflix and being able to stream video or radio mobile TV. But again, you know, you really need to think about all this and how what your core value as a brand is. Cons, they're typically a little bit more expensive to develop. You need to figure out who's paying for those. Is it the user? Is it internal marketing? Is it IT? Is it ad supported? And again, you will have to target by platform itself, which means you wouldn't need to build a version. And we'll talk about a way to kind of work around this, but you do need different versions for Android versus BlackBerry versus Apple itself, and you do need a campaign to support all this. Generally, users prefer mobile-optimized site versus apps, with a few caveats, that being games, music, and social media. Mobile-optimized websites, when you go through this decision process, it's similar to a traditional website, but it's optimized for mobile browsing. A lot of users believe that if their site simply renders on a mobile device, that's optimized. That's not the case. It really needs to be optimized for mobile delivery. And think about the 80-20 rule. It's about 20% of what you have is probably good enough for 80% of your users. And less is actually more on a mobile perspective. It may be true on a traditional perspective, website perspective as well. But less is more if you execute it well. Pros, it's a little bit typically cheaper and easier to develop. It generally works on a larger number of handsets that support mobile browsing, which is fairly commonplace in this day and age. It's more of an entry-level piece. It may not be good for deep interactions. And you can use a system like Sitecore to really power a lot of the content for it. And while that may be true in the app space as well, but it really lends itself well to mobile-optimized website development. Drawbacks is no connectivity, no access, and that's not necessarily the case with applications themselves. The experience is a little tough, and testing is really critical to make sure that you're targeted handsets, and you may need to prioritize targeted handsets. One tip to get around this, and John will talk about this towards the end, so I won't spend a lot of time on it, but Adobe Air is a system that can actually help target if you're going to go to target multiple devices, so Android, Apple, and even the often overlooked desktop application. A lot of users or a lot of clients actually overlook that. But there's a way to kind of package and work with a singular code base. And John's going to walk through a case study towards the end of this call of how we've done that, which, you know, at this point can actually lower cost a lot in terms of being able to extend yourself to a variety of digital touch points. Couple deliverables, I'll leave it here. You may have customized deliverables, but there's certainly a strategy phase to the project. There's also a concept and development phase for the project. And don't forget about iterating, going back and looking at the long-term roadmap. So again, you want to look at user research to drive the initial strategy, and that can take a variety of forms, developing personas of targeted users and how they use that. One piece I'll call out in here specifically is storyboarding or sketching. It's often a good way to sell into executive management. So the last two slides in terms of my piece here, this is really critical information. This is information that we've learned firsthand. I'm sharing it with you. I want you guys to learn and not to necessarily repeat you know, challenges that we've seen in the marketplace or from a client perspective, and we touched on a number of these, but I really want to summarize on these slides, is to focus on the user experience, not just text and specs. Again, we talked a little bit about how Apple has made, you know, its entrance into the mobile marketplace and other marketplaces for that matter extremely well. It's not just specs and text, it's how things fit together as a whole. Another piece is I'd recommend a discovery period for your project, or if you're working, whether you're working internally or with other teams. You really need to have a kind of a ripcord if things go ask you, or if things have changed since you originally crafted your RFP or your project initiation document, be it 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month, work with your partner, and whether it's technology or strategy, to really define what you're going to build. And think about the what and the why. You can have technology think about the how later. But you really need, again, to offer core value to your users. Focus on navigation, and focus on navigation by user need, not by corporate structures. Things have moved beyond the traditional silos of who we are, about us. Users don't navigate that way. Users navigate really by need and addressing need from a mobile perspective. Again, I think it's a mental model with mobile devices as a whole, but it's not just making things smaller. It's making things much more simple and effective. To that point, and I kind of alluded to it earlier, but if you're looking at starting your initial website and mobile at the same time, a challenge I might make to you is to go ahead and start with mobile, because you really have to prioritize what is important. Everything can't be important from a priority perspective, and mobile forces you through that thought process and prioritization process. Start small and iterate. I wouldn't try to hit it out of the park on the first release. You really don't want bad ratings. If you have a small subset of what you can fully do represented in your mobile device or your mobile website or application, that's fine. It's fine to take it further in additional phases and in a long-term roadmap. Again, think about the value. What feature are you incorporating here that makes it valuable to a user? Plan for frequent updates, ongoing support, and take advantage. If you need to fix a bug within an application or a website, you can message that in a positive way, and you can actually roll a new feature in at the same time. So it's sort of like, we care. We fixed this bug that we had within the application or within the website. By the way, we also added this to let you take further advantage of our products and services. So think about that when you look at the support mechanism. Again, you really need, from an analytics perspective, to target, but you can see differences even within a brand. So you might be targeting BlackBerry as a platform for development, but there's a difference between the touch mechanisms and the user interface versus the rollerball itself. So think about that when you're looking at the analytics and you're looking at the devices that you want to target from a mobile perspective. If you're looking at Apple and you're looking to develop for Apple, big, often overlooked item is it takes about 2 to 3 weeks for approval once you submit it to Apple. You need to consider this within your planning phase. You can actually, and we've worked directly with Apple in a number of cases for large clients, to kind of seed them along the way to understand the application or the website that's wrapped in an application to be developed so that they understand, and we might be able to shorten that time a little bit. But from a planning perspective, you need to understand that it's a rigid process, and there is a person at the end that's going to approve or disapprove your application. Again, you really want to differentiate between technical accomplishments and real-world experience successes. So I've seen cases brought to us where the technology itself has worked, but it takes 12 steps to do it. That's not necessarily indicative of a real-world success from a user perspective. Again, start small and iterate. Just because you can do something doesn't mean that you have to, or that your users are going to see value in it. You've got to go back to the user, not just approach this from a corporate perspective. Look at other products and services that you can integrate within, whether it's registration or check-in or social features. There's a lot out in the marketplace that you can take advantage of to help facilitate your development process. Another little tip here, if you're looking at rotation requirements, so horizontal and vertical for apps, that's something that you might be able to prioritize if just going out with one release. I've seen a lot of time and attention paid to the differences between the two, which can lengthen time or shift focus within the development effort. Anything that you can do to save typing time, whether it's auto completion or more intelligent logic and algorithms behind the scenes, but less typing is better on mobile. That said, less copy is actually better on mobile as well, but it needs to be effective, and copy is an element of design. Less is more. Take 50% of what you are going to say and say, take 50% off that is a good mantra to work with. And watch your timeline, and a lot of people view risk as a negative, and it really shouldn't be. Risk is simply a problem that's not yet happened. take a look at risk mitigation strategies. What can be prioritized? What can be phased long-term? What's really needed in the project, and how can you adequately address these risks from a development or project management standpoint? Always have a plan B. And the last thing I want to leave with is really test, test, test. There's a notion, and typically in project schedules, development takes longer than it was expected to, design takes longer than it was expected to, and strategy often changes and takes longer than it was expected to. Testing gets crunched. In that sense, I'm talking about quality assurance testing, but you have to really be careful to not put a poor product out into the marketplace. That said, in terms of the concept itself, test early and with anyone. Grab three people and have lunch with them and show them the current status of the application or mobile website. Get their feedback. Bring a few users in. Sometimes pizza is enough to get a little bit of feedback on a project. But test early and often and with anyone that will provide you relevant feedback within your application or web mobile website development. Last two things I'm going to leave with, and I'll hand it back over to John, is do not forget analytics implementation. There's a lot of ways to implement analytics. Analytics is the measurement, and it tells you how successful you are being, and it allows benchmarks moving forward to what to do, what new features to incorporate. Do not overlook the analytics discussion within your initial mobile strategy development. And along those lines, users think and search very differently in mobile as well. So consider mobile search engine optimization. Users can't type in as long of phrases as they might when they're going to Google to look for content on the web. So mobile has a little bit different metaphor to work with when you're looking at mobile and optimizing your content for mobile searching. So take the information that you've already learned from the traditional SEO practice around your traditional website, and it's an evolving marketplace in mobile, and all the search engines are the same. They're all evolving to take in mobile content, but have someone first and foremost looking into that and applying the best practices within SEO. Don't overlook SEO and don't overlook analytics. So with that said, I'm going to turn it over to John, and he's going to walk us through a case study from ATP World Tour and kind of illustrate how we've been able to work with a number of clients in implementing some of these mobile strategies.
Great. Thanks, Greg. All right. So, Greg, I'll just have you steer the presentation as well here as we go along here. But a little bit of background. We've had the fortune of working with the ATP World Tour, which is men's professional tennis, since about 2009. And when we started working with them initially, it was part of a bigger overall global rebranding effort for the ATP. There was a lot of things going on both offline and online, and they were looking at really putting together a streamlined digital strategy to be able to support their growth objectives as a sport. And so working with them here in the U.S., also understanding that they're an international property as well, we sat down with them and really defined an overall digital roadmap. And during that process, we were able to bring in Sitecore, which is a longstanding partner of ours, which we felt would be a great foundation for their digital framework to be able to put their publishing systems in place and power the ATPWorldTour.com and all of their subsidiary sites, which they have quite a few. During this process, we phased out the development of the platform and the framework for them, launching the sites and all their sub-sites initially, and then understanding that the mobile component was actually going to come shortly thereafter, but a big part of the overall strategy. And so during that time, as Greg went through his presentation and talked to some of the components and all the things that you really should consider as you dive into these types of engagements, we really worked closely with the organization to understand their goals and objectives, to understand what their content strategy was, to understand, you know, how they wanted to communicate with their fans, how they wanted to interact with their fans, both on the website, mobile devices, tablets, different channels, and really formulated a plan. And that was the key, I think, to the overall success, was that we put enough planning and effort into this to make sure that once we had delivered the websites themselves, we'd launched their whole new digital campaign with the idea of rolling mobile right into it, that we had that solid roadmap in place. The the launch of the ATP Mobile experience started off in the initial phase one launch was in October of last year. And we really wanted to make sure that we were covering the widest possible group of fans and consumers that we could with this mobile launch. So in doing so, we came up with a solution that would allow for the digital platform, the Sitecore Content Management System, to be able to publish content, all content, as if they were publishing to the web, but be able to distribute that also to the mobile devices so that they would not need to have to use outside systems or a different administration system, but really work within their standard publishing flow to be able to publish to these devices, which creates a more efficient publishing process, allows their administrators to focus on content publishing process. But what we also had to really consider was the end user and how we were going to get the broadest reach across the most mobile devices. And so what we have developed for them is, and a number of our clients in this process, is really kind of a two-pronged approach to the mobile website experience. The first delivery that we have is for the smartphone user. And if you want to kind of draw or how we title it, it's high-res versus low-res. It's not an actual, it's not a proper description, but that's how we define it, high-res versus low-res. The high-res is really the smartphone-enabled mobile experience, and now it's what they call a WebKit browser, supported browser. And what we've developed is a simple but yet efficient and effective mobile website for all smartphones. The second one is the low-res, which is a degraded version, which is a HTML mobile website, which will allow users that have just a standard phone that supports a browser, supports HTML delivery, basic HTML delivery, to be able to deliver all of the content to that phone as well. So when the user actually comes in to view the site itself, it'll auto-detect what type of device they're coming from and deliver the appropriate experience to the user so that the user or the fan never gets a broken experience. And no matter what phone they're on, which this covers a very high percentage of most phones in the market, they are able to get to the ATP content and associate a good experience with the brand and also continue to become repeat and loyal users of the mobile experience. I can't share exact metrics, but we've had great success with the adoption rate of the mobile site since we've launched, and we've launched a few phases since. The last phase we just launched a couple of weeks ago, which tied in three additional language sites. So we're really kind of taking a parallel path of importance from the website and the mobile experience, equal importance moving forward. Greg, I think we can move on to the next slide here. Some of the key things that we had to consider through this process, we wanted to make sure that the mobile experience never really detracted from the actual web experience. So since they're sitting on the same technology platform, we had to make sure that there was no performance issues. And working with Sitecore made that very easy. The system supports that very well. You're pushing mobile multiple devices. You can actually, for the ones who are a little bit more tech savvy in the group, you can actually integrate this with a content delivery network, digital distribution network, and you can actually tie in all sorts of ad serving solutions, analytics, as Grant mentioned, and a number of other solutions to make sure that you're tracking this properly, that this is an effective overall digital platform, digital mobile platform. We took it a step further at the end of this last year, and Greg, we'll move down to the application development. Once we had the mobile site up and live and saw the successes there, we really wanted to take it a step further. And we went into development on an Adobe Air application for the ATP. And this Adobe Air application was really meant to continue to grow the amount of channels that are out there for distribution of their content. And we went in with the notion of understanding the content from both how users interact with it on the mobile site, but how they also interact with it on the website, and developed out these interactive applications for the ATP. The first one starting with Intel as a partner, Intel the chip maker, and for distribution in their Intel app store. And basically when we developed it out, we wanted to make it a desirable application for people to download. We wanted to make sure that we had acceptance and that it would be worthwhile and that users would actually want to pull it down. So we had to come up with a couple of key features that you may not be able to find elsewhere or that would be effective use of an application for the user. And one of the areas that we came up with, which actually turned out to be very successful, was the live scoring and match stats module, so that you can actually download this application, this is Intel application. You can run it on your desktop, and you can minimize or reshape the live scores and just keep it in the corner. So as you're working at work or as you're working on your computer, you can have match stats and information in a small little widget. But when you want to expand that widget out, it actually goes into full expansion mode, and you have all the other things such as player rankings, tournaments, media highlights, and, of course, social integration. We did this as well for a couple months later for the BlackBerry RIM playbook, which is new and just newly released, and we do feel that it's going to gain some ground. But it is also based on the Adobe Air application. So I don't want to spend too much time on this because we don't want to get too far away from mobile, but I think the key here is that we're looking at different channels of distribution of content and engagement of the user or the fan. And it's important to note that once you get these systems in place, and this being the Sitecore framework underneath powering all of these, once you get these systems in place, you should be able to turn around and figure out how you're going to come up with your device strategy and your content distribution strategy and then put the proper planning in place to be able to deliver that experience to the fan. And it's limitless at this point. And there's, again, as Greg had mentioned, there's all sorts of new devices coming out. There's all sorts of new opportunities. And so it's important to have that foundation or framework in place and to make sure that you define your business goals and objectives up front and continue to measure against those. Greg, there's just a couple of more slides, and I think we're good on here. As I mentioned, multiple languages supported on the mobile device. Right now, we just launched the third language for the ATP mobile, and we're going to continue to grow that. Again, that's all powered within the back end of the Sitecore CMS. And then the last screen is just really kind of summing it up, is that we are really all about multi-channel publishing, and that the footprint, this is specifically for a sports brand, but of course this does work for all sorts of organizations. We do this a lot with our consumer goods companies that we work with. We do this a lot with our entertainment properties. We're really taking a look at leveraging all that great content that these properties are producing and making sure that we're able to distribute that properly and effectively to the fan with a positive brand experience. And I think that wraps up the ATP case study. So, John, just to hand it back over to you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Greg and John, for that engaging presentation. We've got some good questions that came in during your presentation. I'd like to encourage the rest of the audience to continue submitting questions using either the webinar toolbar or via the Twitter hashtag #CycleMobile. If your questions aren't answered, we will follow up with you on an individual basis. I also wanted to mention an upcoming webinar we're excited about, Why Your Marketing Strategy Needs Heroes to Reach and Engage Customers. And that's presented by Josh Burnoff, a best-selling author of Groundswell and Empowered. And this webinar will focus on empowering your employees to reach out to customers through social media and other interactive channels. See the URLs on your screen here for registering. So we'll take a couple of questions, and hopefully Greg and John will be able to answer some of these. One from Philippa was, we have fewer than 10% of our users accessing our website from mobile devices. Does that suggest our users aren't interested in mobile access? Is it worth us considering this at this stage? So 10% of their current website usage being on mobile.
Yeah, you know, I'll start off on that one. But really, at some point, you're going to have to consider mobile, not knowing necessarily what your business is or you know the value associated with it. But what I would challenge back with is really, what does that 10% represent? Are those your primary customers? Are those your best customers? Can you look to analytics to see what that 10% is accessing or looking for? If they're going through a shopping cart scenario or a purchase or conversion behavior, that 10% might be worth addressing. But again, I think really you would want to maybe kind of call in some of you, maybe a focus group could help determine that. Maybe if you have a direct way of understanding who specifically those users are and find out why they're devoting time from a mobile form factor to access your content. Or potentially there might be gaps in your existing website platform that could be addressed from a mobile platform. So I guess really the questions are around what are those users doing and what are they accessing, if it's conversion behavior or if it's customer support behavior. I mean, if you think about business, it's really either making money and sometimes it's saving money. And customer support can be a component of that or both in some cases. But really figure out what that 10% is. But, you know, to answer your question specifically is that at some point you're going to need to address mobile. It doesn't mean you need to jump in the pond quite yet, but at some point you're probably going to need to acknowledge that people are accessing, and that percentage will traditionally, based on the last couple of years or so, will probably grow exponentially.
Yeah, and Greg, to add to that, I think what's also important is to understand the method of communicating that there is this resource there. Again, depending on what your business is, it will depend on how you get the message out that you actually have a mobile experience and that you have a mobile platform and what the benefit of it. So if it is customer support, or if it is, you know, if it's for your fans or if it's for your consumers or whatever it may be, how do you get the word out that there is actually this resource or this experience out there? And that's a key focus as well, because a lot of times there'll be people coming to your site that may not be aware that they have this tool or this resource on mobile. And so considering that messaging strategy is important as well.
Yeah, and also along with that, you really never know what your opportunity is within that 10%. That 10% could be on the cutting edge of where your business could evolve tomorrow and over the next years. If they're looking for some type of gap or some type of feature or product or service that they're willing, again, to devote mobile time, perhaps they're devoting bandwidth to that they're paying for by the bit. So there's something there. I would look into it and really find out. You may uncover a new opportunity for your business or a way to save money or make money.
Thanks for that. Another question of John. How much does SiteCore need to be changed in order to provide content for mobile?
Well, yeah, that's a good question, it really does vary. I don't know about it needing to be changed, but you know, SiteCore, as you know, the users or the implementers of SiteCore understand that SiteCore is a framework and is a very robust and powerful framework. And so, depending on what your publishing model is, and depending on what you're trying to accomplish, both on a website and your mobile experience, would dictate how much you need to configure SiteCore to be able to publish in that regard. And so an example of that is, again, I'll go back to the ATP, is that when we launched the website itself, we had a very rich and robust and complicated statistics engine for all of the player stats and player information and player history that we actually had to integrate into the framework. And so that was a lot of work because we were dealing with an outside solution. And so we also had to take those considerations in when we moved it into mobile, although we did a lot of the heavy lifting on the web. So configuring SiteCore to function in that regard was a little bit more complicated than typical web experience, just because there was a lot of moving parts. And so it really depends on how you structure your mobile experience to determine how much SiteCore would need to be configured to support that. There's other factors, as we mentioned before. You know, make sure you want to integrate your analytics, and if you are an ad-serving model, or if you're working with sponsorship, making sure that you're implementing the ad-serving solutions, among other systems that can be integrated. So we found that SiteCore is very flexible in that regard, and anything that we've needed to do or had to do, we were able to deliver through SiteCore. The implementation for the ATP was about, on the mobile side of things, took roughly about 2.5-3 months to deploy out, but it's also a very deep and rich mobile experience, a lot deeper than most mobile sites. The language conversions were very simple. We turned those up actually in just a couple of weeks each.
Yeah, I was going to say basically the detection of the devices is inherent to the SiteCore CMS. It's really how you want to use that information and what you want to present on which different devices that becomes the sort of factor as to how many templates you have to design, etc. Okay, time for one more question, I think, before we wrap this up. Simon asks, with so many devices available, how do you decide which ones to test for?
John, I might let you kind of take that from the tactical level, because I know that testing is obviously critical, and I do kind of caution that with whenever we're approached with, I want to support 100% of what's out there or every handset that every user of mine is working with, across the world, that becomes a very big challenge. And we do hear that from time to time from different CMOs or, direction down from the CEO. And, we have to balance that with how to optimize and prioritize handsets across the board. That said, there are a number of different testing services, and the QA and the targetability of implementing these mobile websites is definitely a core component. So it's a very good question, because there are a lot of devices out there. John, did you have anything to add in terms of sort of our testing process and, a couple of interesting things with it?
Absolutely. I think that goes back to the point I was making about coming up with two delivery versions of the actual experience itself. And that's how we addressed it, was to come up with a kind of a richer smartphone or WebKit-enabled version that allowed for, for the smartphone users to be able to feel like they're getting a smartphone experience. But then with the Sitecore built-in sniffer, auto-detecting the device and kind of delivering the lowest common HTML solution to the users who have just a standard flip phone or a standard phone that still supports web browsing, but kind of more in a basic format. And so those two different versions with an auto-detect really let us cover the range of the devices out there, not all of them, but a good majority of the range of the devices. And that only actually increases our percentages as time goes by, because some of those older phones out there that don't support web browsing or don't support even basic HTML are being retired. And we're seeing kind of more of a movement to smartphone, but more of a movement to just browser-enabled phones in general. So within the next year, those percentages are going to continue to increase. And so that's really how we addressed hitting the majority of the devices. And it was a very big discussion. It is a very big discussion with a lot of our clients. It is very important to make sure that they have the broadest reach possible. From a testing perspective, it's very important to test. We have a bank of phones that we test against, but we also have a virtual phone QA system that allows us to go in and plug in most types of phones virtually, and it'll actually render what it's going to look like on the phone. So our testing solution is, our QA process is quite extensive, because we want to make sure that you don't have an executive within the organization that you're working for that happens to have a phone that the experience doesn't work well on, because then you kind of lose all of your momentum at that point. So it's important to kind of have a full-rounded overall QA process.
Yeah, John, and I'll second that as sort of a tip. If you're looking at internal development or with a partner, it's often good to find out what devices the executive team is working with.
And yes,
I say that
absolutely.
From experience. Because you either need to address those right up front or set expectations accordingly.
Okay. Well, being that we're in the end of our time period, thanks everyone for participating in this webinar. As a reminder, we will email you a link to this presentation, the recording, including the PDF, so you can view it again and you can share it with colleagues. And we'd love to hear your feedback on this presentation. You can provide that at the link found at the top of the page there on the slide. It's surveymonkey.com/s/mobile webinar, and take a quick survey. So once again, thank you all for your time, and have a great day.